You are listening to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. I am your host, Rosie Davidson, an infant sleep consultant, author, and mum of three. This is a show all about honest chat where I talk about my favourite topic, sleep, of course, but I will also be covering your burning parenting questions and speak to some very special guests along the way. So buckle up and enjoy. Hello and welcome to the Just Chill Parenting Podcast. In this episode, I'm so excited to introduce you to one of my amazing team, Sarah. I love getting my team on the pod so you can get to know them a bit better. We are also going to talk about one of Sarah's favourite topics, the fourth trimester, all about what that is and her top tips. Sarah is a sleep consultant, paediatric nurse and ward manager within the NHS. Her passion for sleep support has grown alongside her extensive experience supporting children and families in clinical practice. Sarah joined my team 2.5 years ago, and I'm so glad that we met. Welcome, Sarah.
Hi.
Thank you so much for coming on the pod. It's a really lovely opportunity for listeners who may know you already or who may be considering a one-to-one call with you to get a chance to really get to know you and to share in your expert knowledge. First of all, can you let us know a bit about your background in nursing, how it's impacted your current role working with me and how you found me?
Now, I was just working it out the other day. I have been in nursing now for 18 years, which I felt like a very long time when I worked it out. I started, before I went into my nurse training, I was a nanny for a big family of 5 boys.
Wow.
And then I went into my, I know, it was and a huge age range. And actually, that family was my first experience of helping with a newborn baby. I already knew I wanted to go into nursing, but, you know, that really sort of really made me think, yes, this is what I want to do. I trained in London, and actually I trained and worked in the same hospital and always have done, pretty much. I've got lots of different experience. So when you do your nurse training, you gather experience from all areas within the NHS, basically, from being in the hospital. I had experience in the health visiting team, special care baby unit. I worked on the cardiology ward before deciding to settle down into renal nursing, which I then have stayed there ever since. And I became the ward sister on the renal unit, oh gosh, quite a few years ago now. What I love about my nursing career and training that has led me into sleep is I've got so much experience of helping families. And I think that's one of the reasons I went into renal nursing is because this is mostly about long-term conditions that are going to be with families for their lives, for their whole lifetime. And so often we, as the nurses on the ward, and certainly as the ward sister, we find ourselves as the sort of consistent family member because you're always coming back to us on the ward. Mm. And that was always been a part of my job that I really enjoy. I like helping families and being able to be there for a family when things are really, really tough. And whether that's through help or now with what I do with through sleep, I do feel privileged to be able to help people. And, you know, that is my enjoyment of it all, really, on both sides, the nursing side and the sleep consultant side. The ward that I then took over was always quite old school. We lived by a routine. I used to come in the mornings and I open the curtains and say good morning to all the patients. And at the end of the day, went and said goodnight to everybody. I closed the curtains, turned the lights off and got everybody ready for bed. And certainly in the NHS, that was seen as a bit old school. But I think it's where my absolute love of routine came from, which I think when I first spoke to you, Rosie, when we first had our conversation, you asked me about what did I think about routine? And I was like, oh, it brings me joy, routine.
Yeah. Well, I think it's really interesting because you do meet people who say, I'm not really a routine person. But actually, if you drill it down and look at their life and their days across a week, they probably are a routine person, but they feel like maybe they have less predictability. But actually, when you look at it, it's like you probably do wake up at roughly a similar time each day. You probably do go to sleep at roughly a similar time. And you may eat your meals at similar times, and all those things that we can do can help our bodies to sleep better because it's working with our own body clocks.
You're absolutely right. I think often people don't realize that those things that they do every day is their routine, because they might be doing all sorts of different things within the days, but the sort of basic building blocks, if you like, of what we need to live and survive in a day are all pretty much around the same time.
Yeah. I think it's really key. So obviously you started out in nursing and then you got really interested in routine. You're obviously quite skilled with working with families and supporting people. How did you get more interested in sleep specifically?
Interestingly, one of the first times I was introduced to, really, I was introduced to the idea of babies learning to sleep independently was actually when I was a student nurse and I did my health visiting placement. And actually, this is like, we're talking about 20 years ago. So this is actually probably quite, the lady who was doing this was actually probably really forward thinking, because it certainly isn't commonplace in health visiting now. But I remember going to, there was one health visitor, I actually don't even think she was a qualified health visitor. She supported the health visiting team. Right. And she used to run every week a sleep workshop in the health visiting hub that I was working in. I remember thinking, this is what helps people. This is what is giving people the knowledge to go away and make a difference to their baby's lives and their own lives in those first early weeks. This is before Instagram existed or Facebook or any of those things. Maybe there was just a bit of Facebook, but that was, you know, it wasn't like this. So it was really key. And I definitely took that knowledge into my practice going forward. On my ward, we look after babies from the day that they're born. I also worked in special care. So taking that in and being able to give parents that knowledge of how they can work towards a more settled night's sleep. That was the first time, really, that I sort of knew about this. And actually, even that experience 20 years ago was the first thing that sort of gave me the knowledge to do that with my own child. I was able to then build on that knowledge. And I think I was really lucky because of my professional experience, but because not everybody gets that.
Yeah. So you already had a really good knowledge of babies, like in-depth knowledge, really, of how to care for babies. And obviously you'd had your experience in your past role as a nanny as well. And then your son arrived. And what was it like?
Yes.
Did that really help you, do you think?
It did really help me. I remember I was worried when I was going to have my baby that I was going to treat this like a job. And I think I probably did a little bit for the first few weeks. And I thought, you know how to look after a baby, which I was very lucky to know how to do. But oh my goodness. So we stayed one night in hospital, that first night at home. So his second night, wow. That was something I wasn't expecting at all. He was basically awake the entire night. And I was like, what on earth happened? This is not how, this isn't how I was expecting this to go. I'd had a really easy first night in hospital. Not easy. It wasn't easy. I was on my own. We were in the depths of COVID. I'd had a C-section and my husband had only been allowed to stay for 45 minutes.
Oh my God.
But I was like, it's okay. I know how to do this. I was, you know, and I set my alarm and I fed him every 3 hours. I was like, excellent. And then, oh my goodness, that first night we got into bed and he basically didn't sleep until about 5 o'clock the next morning. And he just wanted to feed and feed and feed and feed and feed. I am very lucky. I have a sister who lives in Australia, which was a really great support to me because I could text her in the middle of the night and she was in her daytime.
Yeah, perfect.
So I was texting her saying, oh my goodness, what is going on? And she was like, this is completely normal. She sent me a couple of articles about what happens on the second night. And I was like, okay, yeah, this is completely normal. There wasn't much talk about cluster feeding, you know, in the preparation that I had done, you know, not from my nursing experience, but from my own, you know, we did, you know, an antenatal course in the hospital. I don't find there is much talk about cluster feeding.
No.
Luckily, I did know about it. And I was like, okay, get my head around this. I know we've got to go through this to get to where we need to be. This is what he needs to do to be able to feed properly and us to get ourselves to where we need to be. But wow, it was a shock to both of us, actually.
If anyone's listening to this and they're pregnant, please be prepared that the second night can be tough and it can be very wakeful. I think they basically kind of wake up, but also particularly if you're breastfeeding, they're really trying to get your supply going, because with most people, your milk will come in around day three. It might be a little bit after that, but for a lot of people, it's day three. So that second night, they're really going for it to get your supply in.
It's important for people to understand, which I don't think I've told this to so many people over the years, is that's the point of cluster feeding, is that they really go for it because that's what gets your milk to come in. It's a supply and demand, if you like. And they're really, you know, this is what tells your body that it's now time to start producing milk.
And I think a lot of parents can doubt themselves and think, I'm not producing enough for this baby because they're absolutely ravenous and they won't come off me. But actually, to an extent, obviously under guidance, if we need it, we need to trust the process, especially on the second night, and just think we just need to go with it, as hard as it is, loads of skin to skin and just access to the breasts. And it can be brutal, but if you're kind of prepared for that and you know what's coming, I think maybe it can feel slightly easier, or perhaps less concerning, maybe.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's the biggest thing, is that I've spoken to lots of people who it's been a surprise. The intensity of it has been a shock. And I think everyone sort of prepares themselves for lack of sleep and all of that. But I think the intensity of that second night, it is quite overwhelming. And I think in those situations, when you're tired, you know, for a lot of people, they'll have gone through, you know, this is going to be coming at the end of perhaps a few days, if not a week, of getting to this point, and you're exhausted.
Yeah.
And you feel like, how on earth am I going to get through this? And I think having a level of understanding that it's normal is really helpful. And not trying to make decisions within that moment, I think, is also really helpful. Or understanding that you're going to lack confidence in making decisions at that point because you're in the midst of it all.
Yeah, definitely. It can feel like, oh my gosh, I've made a big mistake. Like, I'm never going to sleep again. What have I done? And actually, when it calms down a bit, hopefully not too long after, you're like, okay, I have had a couple of hours sleep. This isn't as bad as I thought it was, hopefully. We've kind of started just naturally talking about the fourth trimester. And this generally is the period from when your baby's born for the first few months. And people talk about this because obviously during pregnancy, we have three trimesters. And a lot of people like the idea of thinking that those first few months are really adapting for you as a new parent and your baby adapting to being in the world. And it's kind of like this intense period, potentially intense. So what are your tips and what things do you think we could be thinking about in this fourth trimester period?
Yeah, so I do actually think it's quite helpful if you like this kind of thinking. I do think it is quite helpful for people to think about it as the fourth trimester. I think it makes you feel like what's happening in that time is more normal. It's a time of immense change for you and the baby. For the baby, you know, the change between sort of birth and getting to, say, 12 weeks, 3 months is unbelievable, but also it's a huge time of change for you as a mother and or a parent, you know, for both of you and as a parent, however your baby came to be with you. I think it's such a huge time of change. So sort of giving yourself the time to be able to make that change. Does that make sense? So just, you're not going to just come into this knowing how to do it all. None of us are. And I think I'm such a good example of, you know, I probably had, before my baby was born, I don't know how many babies I've looked after, hundreds, if not thousands. And during those first 3 months, there were times that I completely lacked confidence in what I was doing. You know, we'd have endless conversations, my husband and I, are being like, okay, so this has happened today, what should we do next? And I was like, I should know how to do this. But I think that was me being a mum. I was learning how to be a mother to my baby. And I think that, you know, that is part of parenting. So I think giving yourself the time to adjust to being a parent is really, really important.
Yeah.
And looking after yourself in that change, because it's huge.
Yeah.
You can forget about the simple things like that actually make a difference. So getting out for some fresh air, having a shower, eating nourishing food, having conversations with friends and family when you feel you want to. So there's nothing wrong with keeping them away if you actually don't feel like it. But trying to anchor yourself in normality a little bit while this is all going on and looking after yourself is really key. What about sleep? Because obviously, I mean, I think one of the hardest things is the sleep or potential sleep deprivation. And not everyone will go through intense sleep deprivation, because some babies are just born and they are pretty good sleepers and it's not, there's not too much drama. But others, it will be really intense and they might have other things going on like allergies, reflux, other healthcare issues. But what can we do? What kind of things can we action if somebody's listening and they're like, I don't know, my baby's a few weeks old and I'd like to start thinking about how I might get a slightly better night for us both?
My biggest tip really for parents with a newborn baby, you know, the first couple of weeks, I think you just sort of have to get through and do what you need to do to get there. Once you've sort of, when you've got to the point of you feel like feeding is going okay, however you're feeding, and if that's not going okay, then you need to get help. That would be one of my first things. But once you've sort of feel like that side of things under control, is to start thinking about trying to start your day at a similar time every day and making that daytime, and then getting out and about, ideally, if you can, in the morning, thinking about getting our day started. Then we can start thinking about the other end of the day, meaning that we can get nighttime being nighttime. And I think it's very easy when you have very disturbed nights to end up in a cycle where you sort of, your daytime becomes living in a dark room because you're exhausted. That first bit in the morning is actually the time when baby sleeps the best. So you keep the curtains closed. That's when you catch up on sleep. And it's really hard to get your mindset out of that. But honestly, to start turning things around would be, almost regardless of what's happened overnight, to be trying to start your day, anchor your day with maybe the morning feed around seven, maybe between 7 and 7:30. And that starts with open the curtains. You know, maybe this is time for your partner to come in. And this is what I always tell couples to do, is the partner who's maybe not feeding or not doing the majority of the night, for example, they can go and make the tea and maybe some toast or whatever your favourite thing is, and come up, open the curtains, have your tea and toast, whatever it is that you need, and start that day with the first feed of the day and with the daylight coming in.
Yeah,
I think that's just helpful to, even no matter how hard your night has been, I just think it's probably realistically not going to be healthy for anyone in your family to be staying inside this dark room just trying to chase the sleep.
Yeah, definitely.
Does that make sense?
And you having explained that just takes me back to my first child. And when she was born, obviously I was brand new to me, first baby, and we ended up doing that. So it ended up feeling like day and night kind of merged together, and it was one long, endless trying to get her to sleep, feeding, me having mastitis. I mean, that was a whole other kettle of fish. Like, I really struggled. But my husband would go to work. So once he was back at work, he would leave for work, I don't know, like 8:15 in the morning, and we would stay in bed. And then, like you said, she might go back to sleep, and then she'd sleep till, I don't know, 9:45. And then I'd feed her again, and then we'd try and get up. And then by the time I was actually up and maybe have had a shower, it would be midday. And I actually found myself starting to feel really depressed, because I was like, I actually knew I benefited so much from when we got into more of a rhythm, and I forced myself out to see some of my friends from my antenatal class. And at the time, my parents weren't living near us, but my mum would come over once a week and support me. And it felt so much better when I got out to see those people and do things with them, even if it was a walk or a coffee, like a quick coffee or something, just to break that cycle. And actually, for your baby as well, if you can get them out in the natural light, so both of you, it can help you feel sleepy at the right time in the evening and try and break this like never-ending cycle of nighttime. And like you said, like sitting in the dark, it's just, I don't think it's good for anyone really.
No, I completely agree with you. The other thing that can happen is you try to do too much and you think, I'm on top of this, I can do anything. You've had very little sleep, but you're like, no, I've got to be doing, especially I think if you've got other children, you have to be going out to school runs, nursery runs, ballet classes, whatever it is, having modest aims, you know, that are realistic, that you're going to be able to achieve, and be feeling confident, say, do you know what? I can't do that today. That's not going to happen today. And if your modest aim is simply to go, you know, and walk round the block and go and get yourself a hot chocolate or a coffee, then I would take that as a win. I think you've absolutely nailed it.
It doesn't have to be big, does it? It doesn't have to be that, you know, you've got someone coming round, so you tidy the whole house and like you look really presentable and you've like made a lunch for them and all this stuff that you might have done before you have a baby. Realistically, afterwards, you don't need to do that. And hopefully with any good friends or family, you don't need to put on a show, and they'll understand that the time face to face that you might want. And it might actually be that you don't want to see them for a long time. It might be, let's just do a half an hour catch up and that's it.
I think if you can be really clear about what it is that you want, which I know can be extremely difficult, then I think everybody kind of gets on board with that. And if people are sort of not understanding that you're not ready to for visitors or for people to come round for lunch or what have you, then, you know, then really you need to just step away from that for a short time, maybe.
One of my tips for the fourth trimester, honestly, is just get food delivered whenever you can and don't worry about like cooking everything from scratch.
100%. One of the things that I have done for people in the past and people have done for me, so, you know, close friends, I've said, if you want to come and visit, you know, in those first early weeks, if you want to come, please, can you bring the lunch and take it all away again? So if I go to see a friend with a small baby, I will take the entire lunch and I will take it all away again. It's like it never happened. Because the last thing you want is to be left with plates in the sink.
But you could do things like, obviously, it's very difficult to ask someone to do this. But if I was at my friend's house with her new baby, I would potentially, while we're chatting, be folding the washing for her. Because anything to take the load off. So if it might be difficult if you don't have anyone like this in your life. But if you do have people who say, can I help you with anything, do say it. And I think it's a very British thing as well to be like, oh, no, I'm fine. But actually just accept help.
So British.
I think one of the other things with the fourth trimester and thinking of it in terms of sleep, I think a lot of people worry about these things, these phrases you may have heard, like making a rod for your own back, spoiling your baby, those kind of things that are very, in my opinion, outdated ideas. What do you think about those?
I would say you cannot spoil a baby and that you cannot care or look after them too much. If you think about it in terms of what does the fourth trimester mean, and that's why I do think it is quite a useful phrase, because it makes you understand that whatever you're doing is right. The baby wants to effectively be in the womb. So if you can recreate that, which is really what that means, is baby being wants to be as close to you as possible, lots of skin to skin time. You may do lots of carrying around, you may have them napping on you when they sleep, you may be in the sling. All of that is exactly what the baby needs right now. And as time goes on, you will, but even if you do nothing other than hold your baby, you will see that as you come out of the fourth trimester, you can begin to move away from things like that. But honestly, it's all set up like this for a reason. It's what builds your attachment. It's what builds your milk supply. It helps the baby regulate by, you know, listening to the sounds, the sound of your heartbeat, by doing the swaying motion that was, it might have felt when they were in the womb. Honestly, you cannot spoil a baby.
For some families, one of the things they'll say is, I can't put the baby down. And while I totally agree with you and I wholeheartedly say all of the things that you've just said, there are times where you might need to put the baby down. And I want people to know, first of all, that we always suggest following safe sleep guidance, which is putting them on their back in the either in their own sleep space, or if you're thinking about bed sharing, co-sleeping, because that's the only viable way that you can get any sleep, or because you like it, please check out the Lullaby Trust for safer sleep guidance. But there are times when it feels almost impossible to put them down. And I would just say, if you're in that moment and you really need to, like, please don't feel guilty about going to the toilet or getting a cup of tea or answering the door.
It's such a fine line, isn't it? There's so much advice out there about how we should be doing things. The answer to all of this is you have to find what works for you. And if you are in a situation where you can carry your baby for 12 weeks if you want to, and that is what's working for you, brilliant. That's amazing. I'm really happy that you can do that. If you are not in a situation where that's possible, and there could be hundreds of reasons why that's not possible, one of which just being that isn't what you want to do, and it's not feeling like it's possible for you to be able to do that, then it's always right for you to be able to do it differently. And the thing about the fourth trimester is understanding that a lot of this behavior is normal, and you haven't got like a baby that's too clingy or whatever, if that's what they want. I think that's understanding that it's normal. But I also think it's really important for you as a parent to be able to say, and now I want to do it differently. And that's also a fine choice.
And there are things we can do if you are somebody who wants your baby to sleep in a Moses basket or a bedside crib or whatever you have. Obviously, it can be more challenging with some. And like Sarah said, you know, it's really normal for your baby to want to be close to you, but you can do things like swaddling. Some babies really like it. Obviously, be mindful that you're doing it safely. White noise, maybe if you've got a bedside crib, you might put them in there and you're laying in bed with your hand on them, things like that. Have you got any other tips kind of for if people want to practice at some point? And it might not be like the first few weeks, it might be baby gets to, like, actually for me with my son, it was between 4 and 6 weeks that we decided to get him into his crib. What kind of tips would you give for that kind of approach?
Start practicing what it is that you want them to do. For example, you're one of those families that you say, I just can't put the baby down. It's important to understand that the baby isn't saying, no, I don't like the cot or the crib or the Moses basket, so I don't want to go in there. At that stage, they literally don't know it's an option. It's not like a conscious choice that the baby is making, but it is a conscious choice that you can make. At some point, are going to have to introduce them to their own sleep space. you can pretty much give them as much comfort and reassurance in their own sleep space as you do when they're in your arms. You just sort of change the location. If you have tried and you've introduced them to the space, I would say you're making progress. You can try again the next day, or you can try again at bedtime, something like that. And each time you try, you'll be introducing them to the idea of it all, and you will be making progress. And I think the other thing at this age is, one of the lovely things about this age is that they adapt to change really quickly. I think they say in the fourth trimester, new habits can be formed in, you know, sort of 3 or 4 days. If you're consistently trying to introduce them to their sleep space, they will get the hang of it.
If you don't try, you don't know, do you?
No, and they don't know either. You know, we often have people come to us and say they won't sleep in the Moses basket. They hate their cot. And I think that is, I 100% know that that's what it feels like at the time, because you put them in there and they cry. But that isn't actually what they're telling you. What they're telling you is, I don't know what this is. This is all completely new to me. I don't know what you're asking me to do here. And they need your support and reassurance to sort of become comfortable in their own sleep space.
And a couple of the things I like to do, or I did with my children, were getting their cot sheet or their crib sheet and sleeping with it, so that when I put it on the crib, it smelled of me, and you can even put a bit of breast milk on it, so that they kind of like, it feels like they're on you.
Yeah. Anything that makes baby feel comfortable in their own space is really, really helpful. And at this stage, it's going to be just such a gradual process. So being there right with them, right by their side, with all the things that make them feel comfortable, using your voice, lots of shushing that you might do already when you're trying to get them to sleep, when you're maybe rocking them or they're on your arms, it's all of that stuff is going to be really familiar to them.
I really like patting. So I think we naturally often will pat our babies when we're holding them anyway. Like, you might be patting them on the bum. Obviously, they need to be put down on their back to sleep when they're little and they can't roll both ways. But you might be patting like their side, or you can pat the mattress and be shushing, just doing any of these things that I think a lot of us intuitively would do, but we maybe forget when we're trying to resettle and we're maybe feeling a bit stressed.
Yeah. The other thing is working out what your baby likes. Some babies like patting. Some babies just like a hand on the chest. Some like a hand on the face. You know, they just like that touch. Some like to have their hand held. Whatever it is that gives them that comfort and that reassurance, it doesn't really matter what it is, working out what it is. And that reminds me of another thing, actually. And it's something that you say all the time, Rosie, is sleep doesn't have to be complicated. And in this stage, whilst you're sort of forming habits around sleep, remember that it doesn't have to be complicated. You don't have to set up a whole rigmarole of things to get your baby to sleep. And I think if you're sort of going through a process that takes ages and ages and they fall asleep and then you have to do this complicated transfer system that it's this and that, we've all been in situations like that, or heard of situations where baby has to do this and that and that and that. Actually, sleep doesn't have to be complicated. And if you're going through a really complex process to try and get baby into the Moses basket, for example, maybe you think, maybe this is a complicating matters a bit too much, and we can actually just go, why don't we just try it going straight into the cot?
And if it doesn't work, then you can pick them up and start again later or do something else. But it's just trying it, isn't it?
100%.
This episode is brought to you by Just Chill Baby Sleep, the number one infant sleep consultancy in the UK and beyond. We really love sleep, and we want you to have all the information that you need about sleep at your fingertips. Our award-winning, self-led online courses can banish those bad nights and leave you feeling calm and in control, and most of all, well rested. For more information about our online courses and one-to-one support, please go to justchillbabysleep.co.uk. Listeners can also use the code JCPP for 10% off any online course or bundle. So sleep well.
What do you think is the most challenging thing for families when it comes to sleep, baby sleep?
Honestly, at the moment, there is so much advice out there and it's sort of wading your way through. I was very lucky when I had a baby. I just followed you, actually, Rosie. A friend of mine said I should follow you. So I did. And I wasn't really in the market for looking at anybody else. I loved your advice. It seemed to me to be very straightforward and simple and uncomplicated. And I was like, great, this is what I'm going to go with. That is sort of how my brain worked. But I think there can be so much out there. If you're looking at lots of conflicting advice, you can often find that you think you're not doing anything right. There isn't one way of doing things. There's lots of different ways of doing things. It's all about finding out what is going to work for you and how you feel comfortable getting there. And really around sleep, that's what it's all about. If what your sleep setup is working for you, absolutely brilliant, you've smashed it. If it's not working for you, finding advice that you feel comfortable with, confident in, and that you trust it, then I would say, shut out all the other noise and go with that, because that's what's going to give you the confidence to make the changes that you want to change and feel supported in doing that.
Such golden advice. Honestly, I feel so lucky that I met you and that you're on my team. And anyone who's thinking about working with Sarah, she does work with babies from newborn and older babies and toddlers and children as well. And if you're thinking about that, then just head over to our website, justchillbabysleep.co.uk. You'll be able to see our one-to-one packages there. Sarah, I want to thank you so much for joining me. We're going to have to get you back on because I feel like this is just the tip of the iceberg.
I know, there's lots of things we haven't talked about, even in this small subject. So, amazing. Yeah, I'd love to.
I hope you've all enjoyed the episode. Please remember to review, rate and subscribe to the podcast. It means the absolute world to have you listening. I'll be back soon with more parenting problems, rants and sleep information soon. Sleep well.